Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
You're John Chespagon.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hi, I'm your inner dream monologue, and you're fast asleep, so I'll be quick. Great job using the Colgate Optic White Overnight Teeth Whitening Pen before bed. When used as directed, it gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 7 days. So while I fly and talk to animals, you're removing teeth stains with ease. Sweet dreams. And when you wake up, keep on living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, taking you behind the scenes with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway, off-Broadway, and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Stockard Channing. The actress has had a career that has seen her create not one but several memorable roles, from Rizzo in the film of Grease to First Lady Abby Bartlett in the NBC TV series The West Wing to Wisa in John Guare's 6 Degrees of Separation, which is, full disclosure, one of my favorite plays. Channing is currently starring in the Roundabout Theater's off-Broadway production of Apologia, Alexei K. Campbell's play about an activist and art historian, played by Channing, whose recently published memoir makes for an uncomfortable family dinner with her two grown sons and their girlfriends. Hi, Stockard. Thanks for joining me.
Not at all. My pleasure.
So this is your second time around with the play Apologia, after you played the role of Kristen in London last year. How did you first get connected to the play?
A year ago, January, I was set the play. Yeah. And I had phone chats with the director, and I met the playwright, et cetera. And then one thing went led to another, and we ended up doing it in London.
In London. Where were you at the time? Were you here in the
I
U.S.?
I was in New York.
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
Right. And what did you respond to in it?
I thought it was a wonderful play. I thought it was a fascinating play and a fascinating character and a bit of a challenge.
Felt like a challenge to you?
Well, everything should be a challenge.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It makes it interesting. So, you know, that was the seed of it.
Right.
And then they got the production together and kind of company, this, that, and the other. We started, I think, end of June, beginning of July.
And it did quite well in London.
Did very well in
right.
London.
Right.
And we were there for 16 weeks. Yeah. It was a limited engagement. We ended at the end of November, about a year ago-ish.
Yeah, sort of. This was at the Bush in London.
No, this was at the Trafalgar Studios.
Trafalgar, excuse me. Yeah,
yes.
Sorry, the Bush was the first production of the play. So we should say that the play was originally written in 2009, had a totally different cast. And then there was this newer production in 2017.
Yes.
And then this production at the Roundabout is, in its own way, an entirely new production. Because
yes,
you're
absolutely.
The only element.
Absolutely. It's a new family,
yeah.
in every sense of the word. New design, new sets, and this new director.
Right. Daniel Auchin,
who was wonderful, and I'd seen his work at Lincoln Center. He had a play called Admissions and various other plays that in the New York area, and also a Sam Shepard play.
Sam Shepard play, and I've lost it.
Sam
the one at
Rockwell
MTC? It wasn't Full for Love.
Full for Love.
Okay,
you win. Bingo.
Yeah, and. What made you interested in returning to it in a different production?
I was fascinated with the piece, and it was very successful. And Todd Haymes, the Roundabout, came and saw it, and we talked about bringing it over here. And as it turned out, for various equity, legal, labor things, the cast couldn't come over, and then the original director couldn't come over. So That's when Alexi and I met Daniel Alkin.
Right. This is Alexi K. Campbell, the
Alexi
playwright.
Alexi K. Campbell, yeah. The playwright, yeah. Who also wrote The Pride.
He wrote The Pride, yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so we met, and we decided that we loved what he said about it, and yeah. Onward. So we started all over.
And the new cast includes includes Hugh Dancy.
Hugh Dancy.
Plays both your sons.
Plays my sons,
twins.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was great.
And what's that... How does that shift things for you as an actor? And
well,
how
you
do
have
you
to
like
start over.
Yeah,
you know, certain things you bring to it. And I like sometimes I said to Danny, you know what? This is how we solve this problem in London. Take it or leave it if you want it. And but most of the times he made it his own,
right.
Which is what he should. You know, that's the thing. But I said, you know, it was an interesting thing to have these two consciousnesses in one's head. You know, I mean, and so basically the second production sort of stands on the shoulders of the original.
Right.
But I don't think the character is very different.
Yeah, I was just going to ask.
But I do think that her relationship with the son is obviously different because they're two different interpretations of the sons and of the other three characters in the play.
Yeah. Did you make any discoveries that you didn't expect to make this time around working on it?
Well, if a play is interesting to do, you make a little discovery every night of it,
right.
Because every audience is different. And at a certain point, you shed the original production, but there's a little pentimento there underneath, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But basically, this Kristen is the Kristen that's taking part in this life of this play in New York.
Right. And does it land any differently here in New York than it did in London?
No, I don't think so. I think it lands very individually with people in the audience. Because it's not a complete comedy. Some people want to laugh at the elements of comedy in it.
Right.
And
yeah, there's plenty of humor in it.
Oh, there's plenty of humor in it. And irony, and she's a fierce, you know, woman with a mouth on her. And she's very entertaining and energetic and interesting. And she's brainy. There's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of dialogue in this show. It's not... you know, you have to listen. You're going to get your money's worth. You're going to sit down and listen, and then you'll have the full e-ticket.
Right.
But, you know, it's about everybody will take it the same way, but I think that where it ends up is a very powerful place. But as I said, everyone's going to come to it with their own histories and their own biases, and someone has said to me that they loved about the play that everybody's point of view is fully represented.
Right. There's something very interesting about, we were just talking about this before we turned the mic on, about kind of the, in a way it sort of looks at the way different generations can have expectations or look at their own lives and things like that. But it also, as you mentioned, it's all very individual. It all comes from a very specific
personal
place. Yeah,
I think, you know, the expectation of what a parent should be, of what a mother specifically should be. And in this world where, you know, mothers are blamed for being the helicopter mothers, the irony here is that she's the opposite of
the helicopter
mother.
Right? Yeah.
And you just
right.
can't win. Yeah. I think basically mothers just can't win. I think
right.
that's, and probably parents, you know, both the genders probably can't win.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And it's that family stuff that you feel like people really respond
to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You were saying that some friends of yours were... You made some friends cry that you didn't expect. So.
Yes, they came last night. And I said, what are you crying? And I said, okay, we did. You got your money's worth.
Right, yeah, exactly.
You know.
Right. And you were last on Broadway about 4 years ago in
It's Only a Play.
Yeah, which was a big hit. And then a
flat-out,
straight-up comedy, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then it was only a few years before that you were in other desert cities, both off-Broadway and on it. And it seems like theater is something you make a point of returning to, is it?
If it's good and it's worth it, I will. I don't just, you know, it's too hard just to come back just to have a job.
Right. Right. And is there something that you get from working on plays that you don't from working on... you know, doing screen work?
Well, it's fascinating. It's fascinating to work with a group of people and create something and then try to recreate it every night. And I think it was like being in a band, you know. It's like being in a band. It's also like being in a basketball team.
Right.
Because, especially this play I think of, because, you know, there's no holding. It's that you got to dribble, pass, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's got to be a team effort.
Right.
And, you know, because we're out there without a net, and, you know, you don't, whereas if you do television or film, which is the same thing, basically,
right.
There's someone else says, okay, you've given us a piece of cloth, and now we're going to cut it and shape it and do whatever we want with it.
Right.
Which is can be absolutely fabulous. People probably can make you better than you were originally. Right. We hate to admit that, but you know, when you're in a play, you're out there every night, just starting at the beginning and going through to the end.
Right. And shaping it yourself, shaping the
all of
the
shaping
night.
It together.
The story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Is there anything in particular that you feel like feels different about this production of Apologia than as opposed to the earlier one? Is there something that
well, when you have a new group of people doing it, I don't think that I think the play itself is
it
the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the when you play ball with the various people, the game itself is going to be the experience of watching the game is going to be different.
Right. Right. For a lot of us, some of your most memorable works in the theater have been in John Guare plays. So that's from, you know, Six Degrees to Four Baboons Adoring the Sun to House of Blue Leaves.
House of Blue Leaves, right.
And I, as I was prepping for this, I sort of didn't know this. I knew that he had written that musical adaptation of Two Gentlemen of Verona, but you were in that.
Yes,
I did
in
not
the
know
chorus.
That.
I was in the chorus.
Yes.
And then it became an understudy. Yeah. Then it became a standby.
And that was your first Broadway credit? Is that right?
Yeah. Well, no. There was a play called No Hard Feelings.
Ah, okay.
The last play that Abe Burrows ever directed.
Oh, wow.
And I was the ingenue.
Yeah.
And I got this horrible review from John Simon saying I was the only ingenue on Broadway with a double chin.
Oh, wow.
I don't think I even had at the time.
No, I'm
I
sure
think
you
I
didn't.
Looked
it's
okay.
But that's a mark of pride, right? But it is
not
to get
really.
A pan from to get
hurtful.
A pan from John Simon.
So
no,
I've,
I know, yeah.
Now I've totally stopped reading them. That's it. Because you're gonna read the bad ones, you're gonna read the good ones, and you're gonna read the good ones, you're gonna read the bad ones.
Right. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But so was that how you first met John, was working on Two Gentlemen of Verona?
It's true. We became friends, and you know, and then when I was the understudy and then standby, and then I took over in the national company for the Hispanic lead, something that would never happen today.
Absolutely.
It was so not politically correct. But I was very grateful I had the opportunity, and that took me to L.A. and various things. And really, over the course of a bunch of years, it has changed my life, my career at least.
Do you have a sense of what it is about his work that clicks with him and his work that clicks with you, and what?
I don't know. I mean, we're very, very close friends. We've stayed friends all these years, and we're sort of on the same wavelength. And I loved working with Jerry Zaks as well, which I worked with twice, until the three of us had a great time together because we kind of have the same crazy sense of humor, and you know, we communicate well with each other.
Yeah, yeah. What role do you find yourself recognized for the most often?
Oh, in this day and age, it could be anything. You know, obviously there's the big Grease thing, but you know, I did a television movie right after when I was just finishing Two Gentlemen, and it was called The Girl Most Likely To, and it was the highest rated ABC movie of the week of the time. I was completely unknown.
Yeah,
it was thrown together in 13 days, but it was all about revenge.
It sounds great. I didn't know anything about it until
I had almost as many people come up to me, because when you're watching television, especially those days when people actually went and watched television, they think they're the only person watching it.
Right.
So there would be, you know, I would be on a plane and this air steward came up to me and gave me his wings.
Oh, yeah.
Because he said, I'll never be mean to a fat girl again.
Wow.
Because I played someone who was fat and unattractive and then transformed herself and went back and killed all the
and
people.
So it takes revenge.
Yeah.
Did Joan Rivers write that?
Yes,
did I read
she
that right?
did
that,
with Tony Holland.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That, yes.
It sounds
exactly.
like a spectacular thing. And
well, it was.
Be, yeah.
And, but that was a million years ago. It was very clunky. It's in the early 70s and sort of thrown together the way things sort of were in those days. But it has this weird resonance. So when you ask me, what am I well known for? Who knows? Then someone come up to me and say, oh, we love Practical Magic. And I say,
really?
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. West Wing also? Is that
West? Oh, yeah. West Wing. Big deal. And Good Wife, when I was on Good Wife.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you were on.
Yeah, but West Wing was really very large.
Yeah.
And Six Degrees, definitely.
I'm always curious about, you know, the rest of us, a movie like Grease has become this sort of iconic thing, and we have these iconic memories of it. How does it exist for you?
It's not a totally
different thing, really.
I saw it when it opened in the premiere, and I went, it was a 20-year anniversary at the what used to be called Grauman's Chinese, that big
thing
in Hollywood, and the party, and I went with a friend and her four-year-old daughter, and the four-year-old daughter, I've said this before, was completely puzzled because she'd look at the screen and she'd look at me and she'd look back. Yeah. She couldn't understand how I could be in two places at once.
Right.
So yeah. I remember that as much as, but I've only seen it those twice.
Yeah. And do you have any memories of sort of working on it that really stand out or,
it was a summer job. I needed the gig.
Yeah. right. Yeah. I also feel like, you know, Grease went on to become this huge thing. I also feel like, in a way, The West Wing, which was very popular when it was on, has grown even beyond that now. Do you feel that as well?
Yeah, I know. When I was living in England, they have it on, you know, constantly. And also with the whole technology of what you can stream something now and all that, it's amazing how strong a memory that is.
Yeah, it's almost... It's become more prominent in terms of... I see it referenced all the time.
Absolutely. Especially in the world we're living in now.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, we have access to all these incredible sort of fantastic universal library of things that you can access in pushing a button, which never existed before.
Yeah, and it remains something that people really gravitate to.
Yeah, and it was also really beautifully done and beautifully written.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite episode?
No.
Do you have any sort of favorite memories of working on that show or anything?
I thought it was such a great bunch of people. From the grip to the co-stars to whatever, they were a really interesting bunch of people. They were unusual and not sort of plastic fruit. They were the real deal.
Right. Yeah. Right. Do you get a lot of that in LA, do you think? Plastic fruit?
That was a friend of mine once said that. That's what happens when you go to L.A.
You turn into plastic fruit. You're a very happy plastic fruit, though.
But I don't know. I avoided the being dunked in wax as much as I possibly could.
Right. And you're a New Yorker. You were born on the Upper East Side. Yeah, right. And then you went to then Radcliffe and is now Harvard.
It was then Harvard.
Oh, I guess it was. Yeah,
yes, it was.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's true. At what point did you discover acting? And
when I was at Harvard, actually. I was there with a really wonderful generation of people, about the same-ish age, and there were some of whom went on to not live very long, actually, unfortunately, but who were the creative elements. And then there was a bunch of actors that people would know, like John Lithgow and Tommy Lee Jones, and Jimmy Woods was at MIT at the time. But there was this, they get that in colleges and universities, that there's a certain, it's a fortuitous thing that people kind of cross-pollinate each other. Yeah. And it was also the people there slightly, were starting what ended up being The Lampoon, what ended up being Saturday Night Live, Frank Rich was also around. It was a very fecund time at Harvard and Cambridge and Boston in those days.
Yeah. Were you a theater person before that? Did you grow up going to Broadway shows?
My parents occasionally would take me to musicals, and they would play musicals all the time. They'd put it on the turntable, and you'd hear all of Gentlemen for Blondes and Happy Hunting with Ethel Merman. I think I know full score of Happy Hunting because when I was, 7 years old, that's what was playing at cocktail time.
Right. And so what was it about your experience of what you did at Harvard that made you say, this is a thing I want to do?
Well, it really engaged me. When I was still an undergraduate, I was in production of Three Penny Opera, directed by a wonderful man no longer with us called Timothy Mayer. Hmm. And we were both kids at the time. But I played Jenny Diver, and I was fascinated by the process, not only of performance, but of creating the character, this, that, and the other. And it intrigued me. So I was sort of drawn to it, but I never believed I would be professional at it.
Right.
I just thought I'd be working locally at community theater or something like that.
Right. And then what did you think you were going to be?
Well, I was going to be a very well-educated wife and mother.
Oh, yeah.
The education happened, luckily.
Right. Do you have an idea of sort of, or what do you think of as kind of your breakout?
When I'm playing this part in this play, Apologia, I do play a woman who was affected by her time, and I certainly was that, when you could be self-determining. You know, as I said before, the phrase women's lib is women's liberation. It was also a generation of people who didn't have to fit the roles that were handed to them.
Right.
And it was a unique time. And not everybody took advantage of it. I did. Mm. Many of my friends did, men and women. But there was that ability to be who you wanted to be, which was not in the air when I was growing up.
Right.
That post-war generation was not really told that.
Right.
So we just made, you know, so that was the synchronicity of falling in love with acting as well.
Right. Would it have been easier if you were just starting out today? What's your take on how the entertainment industry
is
there?
Like,
is there any?
What it would be like? I have no idea, because it's all changed so much.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that I could be living in this sort of is basically a boarding house in Cambridge, Massachusetts, with a bathroom down the hall, working as an intern for $35 a week at the Manhattan, now defunct Manhattan, not Manhattan, Boston Theater Company, Company of Boston, you know, that doesn't really exist. And then, you know, and I mean, there was repertory theaters, there was a lot of off-Broadway. When the first job I really did in New York was in a Elaine May directed piece written by she and Terrence McNally called Adaptation Next, and that was down at the Greenwich Muse Theater, which I don't even
know. Oh, Adaptation was a short play, and Next is a short play, is that right?
Yes.
I was actually in a production of Next in high school.
You were?
I was, yes.
Right, you know, and that, I don't know if that environment really exists now. I have no idea.
Right, yeah. Speaking of Elaine May, she's on Broadway right now. I'm seeing her in a few days.
Good.
Do you still keep in touch with her?
No, I've met her again over the years.
Yeah,
but,
sure,
you know.
Sure. Do you have a favorite role of yours, or a
No.
Is it? It's impossible to tell.
No, that would mean oh, that's nothing's going to beat that. That's too bad.
Right.
It's all
that's
over
true.
Now.
Right.
Don't like to think that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty happy with this one, I have to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot. There's
meaty.
A lot in it,
it's
right?
Meaty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about writing a memoir like your character does?
No.
Yeah.
No. Like, people have asked me over the years, and no.
Yeah.
I think that would... First of all, I don't want to spend the time doing it. I'd rather think about now and the future than the past.
Right.
And secondly, a lot of the stuff that would be interesting, you can't talk about.
Right. Yeah.
Or I don't want to talk about.
Yeah. And so as you're... What do you look for things that you want to do next?
They come to me, basically, you know, and we just see it. You play it as it lays.
Really. Right, yeah. Is there a certain quality about pieces that come to you that you find you really respond to?
No, I mean, I love reading plays with people, you know, sitting down and hearing them out loud.
Right.
And if there's people I've worked with before, and, you know, it all happens when it happens.
Right.
You know, but just see what's around the corner.
Yeah. And are you based in New York these days, or where do you...
Well, I sort of go where I'm working.
Right.
Where I'm working.
Right, yeah. And you enjoyed working in London as well?
Yes. Yeah. I spent a lot of time in London.
Yeah. And what's next for you? Do you know?
I don't know.
What comes after this? Is that?
I don't know. It's exciting.
Yeah.
So I have 8 more weeks doing this, and then we'll see what happens.
Right, yeah. Did you find with the last production that the show changed much over the course of the run? Does that happen?
No. It's pretty much, you know, set. That's when I say set in terms of the timings, the stage manager runs it, you know, that's...
Right,
the,
of
yeah.
course, yeah.
You don't, you know, you can't suddenly go... Well, I mean, I would say in It's Only a Play, there might have been some flights of fancy with various members
for
a cast, but that was kind of the joy of it, because it had a fantastic comedic elements you're reworking with. But even that one, pretty much, you were... You sort of have to.
I just wonder if there's an experience of sort of moments that play a little differently because you've...
I think probably in preview, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then you get to a certain point and it's almost a relief because it's, again, it is like a piece of music. You know where it is. And there's not improv within it, though.
Right.
You know, it's more like a symphony or a concerto rather than, you know, riffing off of something.
Yeah. Do you find yourself gravitating more toward comedy or drama, like something wild like It's Only a Play or something
like
that?
I like both.
This, or,
and there's really, this one is like a mixture of the two a lot. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, I think those are all my questions for you.
Is.
Yeah. That's perfect. Yeah. It was great to talk to you.
Thanks
for coming in.
Pleasure.
That was Stockard Channing, now starring in Apologia, at the Roundabout's Laura Pels Theater.
If you like what you've heard on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe wherever finer podcasts are dispensed. On the next episode of Stagecraft, I talk to Sasan Gabay, the star of the Tony-winning musical that's now celebrating its one-year anniversary on Broadway, The Band's Visit. Until then, see you at the theater.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.